Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The Pope's first visit to the United States continues to receive wall-to-wall media coverage. During his address to Congress yesterday, he called for the abolition of the death penalty, an end to the arms race, and called on Congress to seriously address poverty, hunger, and climate change. He also reiterated his positions against abortion and gay marriage. On Wednesday, he canonized Junipero Serra, the founder of California's brutal mission system. Serra oversaw the extermination of 40% of Native Americans in what is now California, and we did a show about Serra and the missions last week. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. The Pope also addressed the U.S. bishops, saying crimes of sexual abuse should never be repeated. Victims of rape and sexual abuse in the church say the Pope failed to truly address this ongoing crisis. Barbara Blaine, president of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, said we're interested in action, not more words. The glossy words, the statements of sorrow are nice, but they do not protect children. And we will be connecting soon with Will Carlis, who's with Global Post. He has a damning investigation called U.S. Priests Accused of Sex Abuse Get a Second Chance by Relocating to South America. And also in the news this week is the impending budget deadline. The budget deadline is fast approaching. It's on October 1st. The Senate defeated Republican efforts to defund Planned Parenthood clinics across the country, which provide crucial health services to 2.7 million people. But things are not so clear in the House. This morning, Congressman John Boehner announced plans to give up his seat at the end of October and step down as House Speaker. The announcement comes as Tea Party conservatives are pressuring Boehner to push the bill to defund Planned Parenthood and shut down the government in the process. And joining us to talk about media coverage of this is David K. Johnston, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, columnist with Al Jazeera America, and editor of the anthology Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me back.
It's great to have you back.
And here I got all ready to talk about the Pope with you.
Well, I'm so glad because we have so much to talk about. He's taking the place of Donald Trump. And joining us to talk about coverage of Planned Parenthood and the ongoing lies being repeated in the media about the heavily edited videos released by the anti-abortion group Center for Medical Progress is Jessica Picklow. She's a writer and senior legal analyst at RH Reality Check, a daily publication providing news and analysis on sexual and reproductive health and justice issues. Hi, Jessica. Welcome to the show.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. So as we... we have Will. And I would like to welcome Will Carlis, who is a senior correspondent for Global Post based in Rio. His latest investigation, it was a year-long investigation, is U.S. Priests Accused of Sex Abuse Get a Second Chance by Relocating to South America. Hi, Will. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Sorry about the technical difficulties.
No problem. We're very happy to have you. So as we always do on Your Calls Media Roundtable, we start off on a positive note and give kudos to a reporter who did a good job this week. So David K. Johnston, let's start off with you. What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, there's a piece in the San Jose Mercury today by a reporter for their community newspaper section, Victoria Kesra. And I don't know that her story is particularly deep, but it is about a fascinating subject. And a clerk in a grocery store has a lawyer, and he's asked the Sunnyvale city government to prevent the opening of a drive-through grocery store. That is, you would order your groceries, drive up, they'll put them in the trunk of your car, and you drive on environmental grounds. I don't know many grocery store clerks who could afford their own lawyer. The presumed company that would put in this drive-through grocery store is Amazon, though we don't know that for sure. But I think this is another sign of, remember, we had in the Bay Area Webvan, which spectacularly failed despite first-rate fruits and vegetables and meats. I think we're seeing a continuing fundamental effort to undo retail America as we've known it by Amazon, and I think this story gives you a hint of the fights that are coming and the changes in our lives that may be coming, where you just may not go to the store anymore a few decades down the road.
Right, because, I mean, it's Amazon, and here in San Francisco, they're offering delivery from, you name the grocery store, even the co-op now uses this service.
Right.
So we are going to, I mean, we're already talking about the apps that are changing things, but how do you think the media should tackle these issues, David, at a time when there's all these new services and then so many independent contractors are working for these companies and the lawsuits are just piling up?
Right. Well, I think very much there's a need to cover the efforts by employers to use the weakest labor laws of any modern country to drive down workers' wages, which in the long run makes us all worse off. As I think I mentioned on an earlier show, in 2012, incomes in America were down for workers at every level below $75,000, and the number of jobs paying high values, $2 million a year or more, have fallen sharply as well. Which tells you that at every level, employers are doing everything they can to increase returns to capital and reduce turns to labor. And in the long run, reduced returns to labor means that capital will not be as wealthy as it could be.
Right. The LA Times had a piece about these on-demand food delivery services. Grubhub, DoorDash, and Caviar were all slapped with lawsuits Wednesday, alleging that they misclassified their delivery drivers as independent contractors.
And I think they absolutely did. This has been an area of contention for years, but the digital companies and the broker companies have really brought this problem to the fore, and I think it's going to get much worse. And sadly, I see very little indication that the majorities in Congress care at all about this issue, except for making it worse.
All right, so kudos to Victoria Kesra at the San Jose Mercury News, and she's got a piece about grocery stores and grocery delivery, and that is David K. Johnston, columnist with Al Jazeera America and editor of Divided. And what about you, Jessica? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Nina Martin from ProPublica had an amazing piece called When the Womb is a Crime Scene, and it dives into Alabama's chemical endangerment statute and the way that this law, which was originally designed to address the issue of pregnant people using drugs like methamphetamines during their pregnancy, has actually been expanded, and the number, the hundreds of women who have been caught up in this prosecutorial net. And so Nina's article does a really great job, not just digging into the prosecutions of these women, but then connecting the dots to the lack of social services available in Alabama, as well as the zealous movement to create fetal personhood rights and how that happens more often than not, not through direct legislative attacks, but through misapplication of criminal statutes.
Wow, I'm just looking at this piece right now, and the headline is, Take a Valium, Lose Your Kid, Go to Jail. In Alabama, anti-drug fervor and abortion politics have turned a meth lab law into the country's harshest weapon against pregnant women. You know, we're going to talk about this later in the show, but Jessica, at a time when there's so much attention now on Planned Parenthood and abortion, why aren't these stories getting more attention? I mean, ProPublica does an amazing job with their investigations, but you rarely hear about them in the national media or, you know, on the radio shows, TV shows, that kind of thing.
Right. No, I mean, it's an excellent point. I know at RH Reality Check, we try to cover it, and, you know, Nina does excellent work at ProPublica. There's a few blips here and there in the New York Times, but I think truthfully, one of the reasons why these stories don't get the kind of traction they could is that people don't find the victims very sympathetic. You know, it's really hard to get people to feel empathy for a woman who may have a drug dependency issue and, you know, which are many of the prosecutions. I think also, too, there is a sense that this is not an area that the anti-abortion political movement has really paid a lot of attention to, and I do think we need to push back against that because, you know, each one of these prosecutions is decidedly, you know, not a pro-life position to take, yet at the same time, these organizations are silent with these criminal expansion. So, you know, I do hope we get a chance to talk about this more.
Yeah, and we're talking about a lot of women. For this story, ProPublica filed public information requests to identify the more than 1,800 women arrested under this chemical endangerment law. So kudos to Nina Martin at ProPublica for this piece. And thank you for bringing that up, Jessica. That's Jessica Pikelow. She's a writer and senior legal analyst at RH Reality Check. And what about you, Will? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
So I wanted to give props in a different way and give some credit to a guy called Candido Figueiredo Ruiz, who is a reporter in Paraguay who works on the border of Brazil and Paraguay. He was honored by the Committee to Protect Journalists for his commitment for defending freedom of the press. Paraguay, which is one of the countries I went to on my investigation, is an incredibly difficult place to report from. I think something like 5 reporters have been killed there in the last few years. This guy is under sort of 24-hour protection. He has bodyguards, and he's just doing a tremendously difficult job, not that far away from people like me who are able to do our job without really too much trouble. So I just have a lot of respect for people doing this difficult work in difficult parts of the world.
And what is he writing about currently?
So he writes about drug smuggling. Mm-hmm. He writes about border issues. He's based on the border between Brazil and Paraguay. And that's a very lawless kind of area. It's sort of this sinkhole where the city of Ciudad del Este, which is known as the tri-border region, is this area that's kind of been forgotten about by law and order. It's where a lot of the drugs, guns, people smuggling, basically you name it, the crime, the sort of crime networks in South America are sort of funneling through, bringing planes full of like cocaine into South America through, or out of South America, through Ciudad del Este. And this guy has been instrumental, along with some other very brave investigative reporters in Paraguay, notably at an organization called ABC Color, who helped me a lot with my investigation. They're just very brave people working with very few resources in a very hostile environment.
And I got his last name, Luis. Can you repeat his full name for us?
Sure. His name is Candido Figueiredo Ruiz.
And where can we find his writing?
So I'm going to have to check here. He works with, bear with me a second.
Well, you know,
I think he works for ABC Color. So
okay.
It's ABC Color. I think it's .com.py.
Great.
And they're the main media organization in Paraguay.
And you can send that to us after the show. And that is Will Carlos. He's a senior correspondent for Global Post. And we will put links to all of the articles mentioned at yourcallradio.org. All right, so let's dive in and talk about the wall-to-wall coverage of the Pope. A lot of people were seriously joking this week, saying that he took the place of Donald Trump in the media. And I just got an email from a listener, Chris, who says, what is going on with this maniacal coverage of the Pope? What exactly does the media think of the relevance of the Pope in the lives of non-Catholics, non-Christians? David, why don't you tackle this first? What does explain all this coverage?
Well, first of all, 70 million Americans, that's almost 1 in 4, are at least nominally Catholic. So that's an enormous audience. Secondly, once you've gone to the trouble of setting up to cover the Pope in his various locations, it's relatively cheap compared to other news. And we do have this terrible flood the zone problem, particularly on cable television, where one story dominates. What I think is unfortunate in this, Rose, is that the Pope, in his 3,200-word address to Congress, said some powerful things, and yet all you hear are passing mentions of his words. Mm. I mean, he was quite clear. He said, a political society endures when it seeks as a vocation to satisfy common needs by stimulating the growth of all of its members, especially those in situations of greater vulnerability or risk. And the rest of the talk was generally along those lines. And yet it gets a passing mention, and I know far more about the robes he's wearing and the little girl he kissed who broke out from the line than about the substance of what he has had to say.
That also struck me, and also the way that it was framed in the media is that, well, he gave a few bones to the liberals and he gave a few to the Republicans. He talked about poverty and hunger and climate change. Oh, but he also reiterated his views against abortion and against gay marriage. And that was sort of how it was framed.
Yeah, and that's about the substance and the depth of it in terms of the coverage, which is just terribly unfortunate because I think that he has made a very clear statement about the need of the country to stop this upward redistribution that takes from the many to give to the few.
And so on the social issues, Jessica, what are your thoughts about how those were covered? And also, why do you think the Pope got so much attention this week?
Well, I think part of the answer to the why question, at least in terms of the invitation to Congress and in addition to the coverage is, you know, the U.S. bishops have quite a lot of political power, particularly with the conservatives in this country. And so I think that there is definitely a nod to that. In terms of the coverage and on the social issues, you know, these are difficult issues for Catholics, but I think the coverage has been pretty abysmal, frankly. The idea that the Pope would say anything radically different on abortion, contraception, gay marriage, I think, you know, we can't expect that. At the same time, though, we can and should press this very important leader to make some connections. He has raised, for example, the issue of poverty and climate change and linked them. But we need to get him and the church and the leaders to link contraception and the church's position against that as contributing factors as well. So I think that, you know, similar to the critiques on the thinness of the coverage with regard to social justice issues, with regards to reproductive health and those issues as well, it's been equally as bad.
And we're going to stick talking about coverage of the Pope for about 10 or so more minutes. So if you'd like to weigh in, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Why do you think the Pope has received such wall-to-wall glowing coverage? What are your thoughts about the coverage since there was so much of it? What did you actually learn? How do you think the media should cover someone like the Pope? He gives his first address ever to both houses of Congress. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Will, before we talk about your year-long investigation, how do you explain so much coverage of the Pope, and what did you think of it overall?
I'm not going to be very charitable, and I'm going to say I think it's laziness. I think that as somebody who's sort of kind of broken into, I guess, a little bit the Vatican, the very close-knit Vatican press corps that follows the Pope around and sort of pat each other on the back about writing glowing stories and finding nice little feature stories to write about, you know, whether the Pope's hotel is going to have bed bugs and what he's been wearing that day. I think it's laziness. You know, I think I everything you read about the Pope, you read in the same three sound bites every time. You know, it's just it's a bunch of people just telling us what the Pope is doing instead of actually drilling into some of, you know, really, really drilling into some of the things he's saying. I think your previous guest, Jessica, hit the nail right on the head when she talked about, you know, putting some substance behind these words. And as, you know, as we'll talk about with the child sex abuse case, I mean, that's a huge problem. It's one thing to stand up and say that it's a problem in the church and to acknowledge it, but you know, I've been talking to people for the last year who've given me all sorts of very simple, very concrete things that the Pope could be doing and is not doing, and I haven't seen at least any of the tight-knit Vatican press corps writing about those issues.
Well, the Survivors Network of those abused by priests said that they want action. They don't want more words. And they said that they would like the church to turn files over to the authorities and assist with the prosecution of sexual predators and to also let families know that, yes, it is okay to report this, rather than the line they've been giving the last couple decades is, if you report it, you're going to hurt the church. What else are you hearing about what steps the church should actually take?
So we actually did a story focused on exactly this. We didn't want to just point out the problems. We wanted to try and come up with some of the solutions. So I spent a couple of weeks calling some experts on this and saying, asking two questions. Has the Pope done enough? Has he made meaningful change? And if not, what could he do? And I got back pretty much the same responses from the critics who said, yes, he should hand over this paperwork. He should make one of the really interesting things that I was told by one of these sources is look, the church is a hierarchical institution that's based on the concept of promotion, of working your way up the ladder from priest to bishop to archbishop, you know, up to cardinal and maybe to become pope. And one of the very simple things the Catholic Church and the Pope could do would be to make that hierarchical system dependent upon not only not covering up child sexual abuse, but on proactively going out and searching for it and sort of saying, look, if you are a priest or a bishop who is ever found out to be protecting a child sex abuser, you're not going further up the ladder. That's something very simple that the Pope could do and hasn't done, among various other things.
Well, and so your year-long investigation found that the Catholic Church has allowed allegedly abusive priests to slip off from the U.S., to slip off to parts of the world where they would face less scrutiny from prosecutors and the media. You tracked down and confronted five such priests. All were able to continue working for the church in South America despite serious accusations against them. How did you first even go about starting this investigation?
So this investigation grew out of a story that I did last year where I did a one-off story where I heard about a guy called Carlos Urtegoiti, who is an Argentine priest who had been accused of all sorts of awful things in the United States. The Bishop of Scranton had sent out a public message saying that this man was a serious threat to young people, and yet he had been allowed to transfer to the Diocese of Ciudad del Este, the city I mentioned earlier, in Paraguay, and he was the second in command of the diocese, the second second largest diocese in Paraguay. I convinced my editors to fly me to Paraguay to go and find this guy and get him on camera and confront him with some of the allegations, and that's story actually led to the Vatican sending an envoy to Paraguay, and eventually Carlos Urtegoiti left the church in Paraguay, and so did the bishop who had protected him. Now, in the wake of that story, I was contacted by people like SNAP and a group called bishopaccountability.org based in Boston, who told me, you know, this isn't just one guy. These guys are all over the place. They're allowed to transfer internationally, and that this is the next chapter of the sex abuse crisis in the church, where instead of moving somebody from one diocese to another or one state to another, they're now moving people to other parts of the world.
David, why do you think this issue hasn't gotten more attention this week in the U.S.?
The issue of priest abuse?
Yes.
Well, partly because I think that it's regarded wrongly as old news, and partly because the Catholic Church runs an incredibly powerful operation to suppress that news. The late Maureen Cavanaugh at the Philadelphia Inquirer, Jason Berry in New Orleans, a lot of other journalists, had their careers really seriously put in damage because of the absolutely false attacks on them by the Catholic Church, which is perfectly happy to bear false witness whenever it will protect priests from exposure, and the absolute failure of prosecutors to do their duty. But we see this increasingly in this country. You know, my column this week in Al Jazeera and last week is about how you can kill people left and right, and the federal government will not prosecute you. It'll just demand that your employer turn over money to the government, and not even necessarily to go to the victims. We have a real serious breakdown of criminal justice rules in this country.
And you're talking about Volkswagen, and then I forgot the name of the peanut company, because you wrote about
Peanut Company of America, but not just Volkswagen. General Motors sold cars that even before the first one was sold, they knew had defective ignition switches.
Right.
And so did Toyota. Toyota argues perhaps that it didn't understand, but General Motors flat out, we know, knew that they were selling defective cars. 120-some people died, and not all of them were customers of GM. And so we've got a real serious problem with the nature of who we're prosecuting for crimes in this country.
And hold that thought, David. We're going to take a quick break. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your Call on local public radio, KALW San Francisco. If you'd like to join today's conversation, if you have a perspective that's not yet been heard in today's discussion, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK, or you can send your email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's Inflection Point with Lauren Schiller. Following that at noon, the Tavis Smiley Show.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on Monday, we'll have a conversation about what is being done to protect elephants. 35 years ago, there were 1.3 million elephants in Africa. Today, there are only 200,000. Every year, 35,000 elephants are killed for their ivory. A recently passed Senate bill in the state of California would ban the sale of ivory. So how close are elephants to extinction? What can we do to save them? That's on Monday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you'd like to join us today to talk about media coverage, why do you think the Pope got so much glowing coverage? What do you think of the coverage that you saw because there was so much of it? What did you learn about policies, about what he said? Did you see stories about the sexual abuse scandal? Give us a call at 866 and the rape scandal, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, columnist with Al Jazeera America, and editor of Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. Jessica Piclo is a writer and senior legal analyst at RH Reality Check, an online news site providing analysis on sexual and reproductive health. And Will Carlos is a senior correspondent with Global Post. I hope you can read his explosive investigations. U.S. priests accused of sex abuse get a second chance by relocating to South America. And let's hear from Doug in San Francisco. Hi, Doug. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I think that the coverage of the Pope's visit has been largely atrocious. And in this case, I think even you, Rose, are a part of it. Everyone in the press is looking for scandal and controversy in his visit and not really thinking about what he's saying. You mentioned that he reiterated his opposition to gay marriage, and I don't see that in the comments that he made to the Congress yesterday at all. He did say that he sees that the family is being threatened, perhaps as never before, from within and without, and that fundamental relationships are being called into question, as is the very basis of marriage and the family. And from that, everyone is taking that he's saying that he's opposed to gay marriage. But if this fellow was actually the pastor to 70 million Catholics and even more Christians, perhaps, and even more people of faith, perhaps, wouldn't he also be taking into account in these changing relationships the fact that still almost half of marriages end in divorce, that one out of every three American children are born out of wedlock, that there are 3 million children in America whose 1 million parents are convicted and in prison, and so they're not at home to look out for them, and that the economic system that we have is making it so close to impossible with this great income inequality for people on the lower end of the skill levels to be able to support a family, even if they're running two or three jobs. It's just cheap to say that this was a statement about gay marriage.
Well, this morning at the UN, he did say homosexuality is abnormal. Are you still there?
I'm still here, but...
Well, it's a fact, right? I mean, that's what he said. So what kind of coverage would you like to see?
I would like to see a discussion about how his statements are far-reaching and and insightful rather than that he's avoiding scandal and trying to look for the conflict in what he's saying.
Well, I mean, the child abuse sex scandal is a fact also. And the fact is, as Will Carlos from Global Post found, that U.S. priests accused of sex abuse are being sent to South America. And survivors in the United States are really angry because they don't think he did enough to talk about this issue. And in fact, Will, SNAP has also said that their helpline is receiving so many calls from victims. This always happens when a scandal breaks or, for example, when the media focus on the Pope, because it brings up a lot of past emotions that have been suppressed.
Yeah, I didn't know that, actually. That sent a shiver up my spine to know that. I don't want to say good, but it's nice to hear that those people are getting in contact with SNAP. I have to completely disagree with the caller. I mean, you know, the Pope knows the impact of every little nuance of every word that he says, or if he doesn't, he should do. I mean, this is the same way, you know, people will analyze every little thing that the chairman of the Fed says. They'll analyze every little thing that President Obama says. And the Pope knows that every single little nuance of everything that he says is going to be interpreted, you know, umpteen times. And that's exactly why he makes the sort of, vague but very slightly titillating, comments that he makes. So, yeah, I disagree that the media is doing the wrong thing by grasping hold of those things and discussing them and analyzing them and trying to figure out exactly what it means and what it means for the future of the church.
Rose, if I can.
David, go ahead.
I think the caller actually has a valid point. I read the Pope's comment about family more broadly than just gay marriage. I mean, for example, we have an explosion of working class white women having children out of wedlock in America. That would fall into the rubric of what he was talking about. And at the same time, there is absolutely every nuance of his public comments is carefully plotted and planned. There is subtext in it. And the news media coverage, as I said at the top of the show, has been, I think, you know, very bludgeoned, not done with a fine pen and with careful attention to the message he was sending in there. But there's a lot of messages there to pick and choose among. They just deserve more than just a passing mention and then a, you know, gloriously detailed description of his vestments.
Well, and so speaking of that, Jessica, on Wednesday, the Pope made an unscheduled visit to the Convent of Little Sisters of the Poor. This is the group of Colorado-based nuns who filed a complaint against the Affordable Health Care Act's contraceptive mandate in 2013. And according to a Vatican spokesman, the Pope's visit was meant to show a sign of support for these nuns who oppose birth control.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll note that he didn't meet with Sister Cregan, who, and, you know, the nuns in this country who are really pushing and have pushed conservatives and the bishops on issues of social justice and economic inequality. You know, I think there's really a lot going on in this conversation. I mean, one, to the point of the Pope's comments with regard to family, you know, absolutely there are a variety of quote-unquote attacks on, you know, or disruptions to the traditional patriarchal structure of marriage and family in this country and internationally. But I think if we're going to look at something like the number of working-class women who now are single mothers or who are choosing not to marry, for example, you know, that is a conversation that I would love to have Catholics engaged in, because that is a conversation about the impact of contraception policies, yep, of abortion restrictions, of a whole host of things, in addition to maybe people just don't want to marry because the same economic benefits may or may not be there depending on where you start out in that spectrum. But I think that it's, you know, the point that the Pope's comments are always very heavily scrutinized and therefore very heavily scripted is a really important one, because so are these visits and going to Little Sisters, you know, an organization that not only stands to lose absolutely nothing in the fight over contraception coverage in the Affordable Care Act, but has no affirmative obligation to cover it anyway under ERISA law. I think that also really shows that he is a political figure as much as he is a religious figure. And at least in this country, that's how this is playing out, and it's something that I think that we need to keep the attention on.
Well, thank you for the call. And, Will, before we let you go, what is next for this investigation? I mean, did you speak with any U.S. politicians? I mean, the politicians that are working so hard to defund Planned Parenthood because they say they care so much about the unborn. What about these kids that are being molested?
I didn't. You know, I mean, the focus of my story was very much on the victims or potential victims in South America, and the fact that you know, that the church is giving pretty much carte blanche to accused priests to do these transfers and to carry on to carry on life as normal. As for what's next, I mean, I want to make very clear that what we set out to do was to wholly describe this problem, was not to go and draw a line around it. We wanted to show people some shocking examples of something which is a massive worldwide problem. There are these priests all over the globe. We know of dozens of them who have gone to places like Africa and Asia. So what's next? Well, I hope that whoever keeps paying me for my journalism, keeps the story alive and is willing to keep sending me places to go find these guys, because I think it's an important story that's not going anywhere.
And David Klossahi, national director with Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, said that as developed countries find it tougher to keep predator priests on the job, the bishops are moving them to the developing world where there's less vigorous law enforcement. So is this coming straight down from the Vatican? I mean, who's allowing these priests to move to different countries?
So I can't say that somebody at the Vatican is pointing fingers and saying, send that guy over there. I've got no evidence that that's what's happening. What I can say is that nobody at the Vatican is at the moment is stopping this from happening. I mean, that these men are allowed to transfer with impunity, and that the church is not doing investigations into them. The key takeaway from our story, I think, is the fact that, look, a lot of these guys, you know, okay, one of them has admitted the abuse, the other people were suspected of it, were investigated, in some cases indicted. But, you know, I don't know, I have no definitive proof about what happened in each individual case. But the takeaway point is that these are men with huge clouds of suspicion over them, who the church has the power to investigate, has the power to go and do its own independent investigations and to decide whether or not children are at risk, and if they're at risk, to remove these men, and that's what it's not doing.
Well, Will, thank you for joining us. Thank you for these pieces. Will Carlos is a senior correspondent for Global Post based in Rio, Brazil. Thank you so much, Will. And you can find his story, U.S. Priests Accused of Sex Abuse Get a Second Chance by Relocating to South America, at yourcallradio.org. And sticking with us for the rest of the hour is David K. Johnston, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, columnist with Al Jazeera America, and editor of Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. And Jessica Piclo is a writer and senior legal analyst at RH Reality Check, a daily publication providing news, commentary, and analysis on sexual and reproductive health. And David, we have an email for you from Tim, who says, driving a 2012 Ford Focus and the transmission randomly fails, taking it in several times. Ford says everything's okay, filed complaints with the NTSHA. A class action was filed in March on this faulty transmission, but I'm supposed to keep driving this faulty car. It feels like I need to know the number of fatalities it takes before it's just the cost of doing business. I hope I'm not one of them.
Well, this is a terrible problem that we're going to have for some time, because we have a Congress that, as the Pope very adroitly pointed out, is not focused on the needs and concerns of the common people. And, you know, we had very tough auto safety laws thanks to Ralph Nader now 50 years ago. But the auto companies have wheedled them away, and they're allowed to do their own testing. You know, I teach a course on the principles and the theory of regulation at Syracuse University's College of Law, and part of what we talk about is and learn about is how to design regulatory systems. The automakers test their own cars. We don't test them independently for them. They get to determine the through fine rules in the regulatory proceedings in the Federal Register what the testing terms are. And we really need to have consumer advocates, and this is happening all throughout our government. I mean, we've had the scandal that you've talked about on the show at the Public Utilities Commission, where a former CEO of Southern California Edison was in making deals and trying to manipulate the system on behalf of PG&E and others. That's going on in New York. It's going on in Washington. People have got to demand that their government give consumers at least an equal voice, and right now they have hardly any at all.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you for that email, Tim. So let's dive in and talk now about the government shutdown. The Senate has defeated a Republican effort to defund Planned Parenthood clinics across the country, but things are not so clear in the House. And, David, now this is getting a lot of attention. Congressman John Boehner is announcing plans to give up his seat at the end of October and step down as House Speaker.
Yeah, and I think that suggests that the likelihood that we will see a government shutdown has gone up a lot. Boehner is not a radical. He's not one of these purist government-hating people. He's a sort of classic Republican, and that he's giving up Congress and giving up the seat of Speaker tells you that he finds his position untenable. And it is amazing that we're going to do this over these unbelievably dishonestly edited videos from Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. The flat-out lie that Carly Fiorina told that she's been called on and she won't back away from, claiming she saw things that don't exist. I mean, imagine if we applied the same standard to all of the government payments that go to various Catholic entities which are involved in feeding the poor and running hospitals and other services on behalf of the government over the Catholic priest scandals, where you don't need to have deceptive editing to establish the case that there's a significant number of priests who are predators and have engaged in criminal violations of children.
Mm. Jessica, what are your thoughts on this? Sarah wrote in and says, is the truth deemed too complex? Is the fact that there are zero federal dollars supporting abortion services irrelevant? I wanted to give kudos to Michael Hiltzik with the LA Times. He wrote a good column recently called, "It's Time for Carly Fiorina to Apologize to Planned Parenthood for the Lies That She's Been Telling."
Yeah, it's astonishing in some sense, I guess, or maybe not, given the current crop of conservatives, the extent to which conservatives are willing to deny reality and demagogue women's reproductive health care for whatever political gains they can. And this Planned Parenthood government shutdown thing, I mean, this is not the first time we've been here over these particular issues. You know, this is what is, I think, sadly, passing for platform and governance from a particular wing of conservatives. I mean, John Boehner was no friend to women's reproductive health care issues.
Right.
He was no moderate on abortion rights issues. And for him to throw up his hands and say, even this is too much for me, I think is a real statement on just how radical part of the conservative caucus has become.
Well, and so what about the facts around Planned Parenthood? It gets $500 million a year. Most of that money comes in the form of Medicaid reimbursements for women's health care. It provides crucial services across the country to 2.7 million people. And I am seeing in the independent media that even if you transfer that money to other women's health clinics, and again, the media aren't saying, well, are you talking about crisis pregnancy centers that have been known to lie to women about health? A lot of women in rural areas do not have any other option. Jessica, I know you've been covering this extensively and taking those angles at RH Reality Check, but what about the national media?
We see not nearly enough on the national media, particularly in terms of the impact on this. I mean, one little exercise that I suggest for people who say that it is entirely possible for the existing healthcare system and apparatus to absorb any loss of a provider like Planned Parenthood is for them to call the doctors in their area and see how many of them are taking Medicaid patients, new Medicaid patients. They will find that not many of them, if any, are. Do you happen to live in a state that rejected the Medicaid expansion? Another really relevant question to ask in all of this. And you know, so there is that part of it. And then I think, too, there has been the tendency in the national media to create a false equivalency to, despite the fact that the evidence is overwhelming and uncontroverted, that these videos are completely so heavily edited to be fiction, to still treat them as a source of legitimacy or information for journalistic or newsworthiness. I mean, you know, they're hit pieces and they're nothing else, and yet we are having serious policy conversations around them, and that should be an embarrassment.
David, what explains that? The media keep calling these videos controversial.
Well, because that's the shorthand and the cheap and easy way to do it. Look, we have had honest reporting under calculated, well-funded, serious attack for years. Even in the city of my birth, San Francisco, I saw the last time I was there a car with a bumper sticker. I don't trust the liberal media. I don't know what the liberal media is once you get past The Nation and Mother Jones. The embrace of this by of these films, which are totally dishonestly edited, and the failure to say that directly, though, reflects this notion of how professionalism in journalism has turned into this, oh, well, if you're not even-handed, you'll be attacked. And trust me, you know, remember, AT&T once assigned a vice president just to go after David Lazarus when he was the consumer columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle. There are plenty of examples of reporters who get hundreds of complaints to their editors for just telling the truth about issues like this. And so, you know, it's easier to just sort of assume that the readers will figure that out and gloss it over. I think it's a terrible mistake. You know, and this is, goes all the way back to the original film. Remember when James, whatever it is, Breitbart's protege, yeah, did the Planned Parenthood videos where you thought he was showing up as a pimp, and then you it turned out when he arrived in the office, of course, he was dressed in a business suit. The young woman was with him, and one of the people they made look terrible in their films actually picked up the phone the moment they left and called the cops.
Right. It also reminded me of the takedown of Acorn.
Yes, which Acorn was involved in helping poor people have political access, and when they found people who had cheated them and had falsely said this person is registered to vote, they turned them in, and this was used to attack Acorn. This lack of regard for truth is very important. There's a hashtag I use on Twitter all the time, hashtag facts matter. And to a lot of people, they don't. I mean, Carly Fiorina and Michael Hiltzik, who's a terrific journalist, nailed her perfectly on this issue. There is a complete lack of disregard. You know, in a courtroom, you wouldn't get away with this kind of stuff. But in the courtroom of public opinion, the standards have been lowered, the staffs have been cut so much, and the intimidation has gone on for so long that it has just removed a lot of backbone. And it's very bad for our democracy and for our continued liberties.
Jessica, what about the impact if Planned Parenthood is defunded? Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, gave a powerful speech on the floor of the House and said, let's be honest here. You get rid of Planned Parenthood and women will die, because in so many poor parts of the country, this is the only option they have. And you're just not really hearing about that.
No, and it's not hyperbole, you know, and we actually have a model of how this will look like going on real time in Texas. I mean, you know, this is a fight that is not brand new, and, you know, now we have stories that are starting to come up of women having to seek care in Mexico, or, you know, women and entire families, because it's not just women who use Planned Parenthood, right? I mean, they serve the people who walk in their door regardless of gender or identity or any of those things. So, you know, the idea that women will die, I think we've gotten, you know, accustomed to saying, oh, well, we'll never go back to the days before Roe. But I think what we have to be honest about is that for a lot of people in this country, we are already there. I mean, you know, the Pope, we can bring it back to the Pope. The Pope is in town, and yet, you know, we have stories of Catholic hospitals in Michigan denying a tubal ligation to a woman who's pregnant and a mother and with a wanted pregnancy and has a brain tumor. And her OBGYN has said, hey, if we don't do this, your next pregnancy could very well likely kill you. And the hospital has said, well, we won't do that because it violates Catholic doctrine on permanent sterilization. So, you know, there's so much going on, and the attacks are ubiquitous when it comes to health care, and particularly health care for the poor in this country, that what we see in the Planned Parenthood attacks is that just wedged 3, 4, 5 times more, because it is primarily women and low-income women that they serve.
You have a piece at RH Reality Check just briefly. As reach of Catholic hospitals grows, so does risk to patient reproductive health care. You report that by the close of 2011, 1 in 9 hospital beds in the U.S. existed in a Catholic or Catholic-sponsored health care facility?
That's correct. So, you know, we talk about what are the choices for facilities, you know, for patients across the country. And for some, it is a Planned Parenthood or a Catholic hospital, or that's it. And that's not just the rural South. You know, one of the stories that I highlight in that piece is a California patient, a woman who was lucky enough to herself be a lawyer and know her rights and was able to successfully demand that the Catholic hospital in her area not discriminate against her on the basis of its beliefs.
Right.
And, Rose, if I can add a point to
that.
Because this is a terrible problem that we have with access to health care for women. Lots of women are dying for reasons that have nothing to do with abortion.
Right.
They have breast cancer or ovarian cancer that isn't detected if they don't have access to the kinds of services that are free and readily available from Planned Parenthood. But many of these Catholic churches are actually owned in joint ventures with Wall Street. So you now have not just the Catholic Church saying we have our doctrinal views about this, which they're entitled to hold. I will defend to my death their right to hold those views, not to impose them on us, but to hold those beliefs. But now you have Wall Street profiting off of these beliefs because it's in partnership with the Catholic Church in many, many of these health systems.
David, where can we find reporting about that?
Well, I've done some of it at Al Jazeera. I have a big project in the works about this that'll come out in a few months. But there's been very little about it because this stuff it's buried in this incredibly complicated government stuff. You know, Ralph Nader has a great phrase for this. He says, you know, tax law and regulations are designed not to be understood by mere mortals.
And so you're working on a big package on that. What are you working on right now?
I mentioned in an earlier show, you know, I'm still drafting an entirely new federal tax code that's much simpler and much easier and much more effective, and we'll have that out sometime next year. And there are a couple of investigations I don't want to talk about that are coming, and I have a piece that unfortunately is behind a paywall next week in the Journal Tax Notes, showing that Ben Carson and Mike Huckabee know absolutely nothing about tithing, that all their public statements are utter and complete nonsense. And I've got scholars who understand both tax law and the Old Testament taking them apart.
Wow. And Jessica, just quickly, what are you working on?
The Supreme Court term is about to start, and there are a whole bunch of really potentially awful cases for my beat. It's going to be a big term for labor rights and in union fights, and the likelihood of having another abortion case with the fight over the clinic shutdown law in Texas is.
All right. Well, we'll definitely have you back to talk about that. Jessica Piclo is a writer with RH Reality Check. David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize winning investigative reporter and a columnist with Al Jazeera America, among other outlets. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What's being done to protect elephants? On the next Your Call, we'll discuss efforts to stop elephant poaching. Just 35 years ago, there were 1.3 million elephants in Africa. Today, there are only 200,000. Every year, 35,000 elephants are killed for their ivory. San Francisco and Los Angeles are two of the largest markets for illegal ivory sales. A recently passed Senate bill would ban the sale of ivory in California. So how close are elephants to extinction? It's Your Call with Hannah Baba and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Ruz is on as senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Closed by Live Human. Special thanks to